morning. It is still morning. Go ahead and take a seat, everyone. I'm sorry if there's been a delay. We had kind of a confusion on the calendar, and we weren't sure if everyone was here and ready to go. I want to thank you for appearing today at the Court of Appeals. This is our last oral argument case presented, and we have other matters that will require our attention. After, I want each of you to remember when you make your remarks that you each have 15 minutes. An additional 5 minutes is reserved to appellant counsel for rebuttal if you choose to do that. Please introduce yourself and indicate which party you're speaking on behalf of before you begin your statements. And appellant counsel, when you're ready, oh, I'm sorry. I need to have our marshal call the case, at which time you can approach the podium.
Calling case number 822081,
Dempsey versus Lowen. Thank you, Your Honors. John Jerbeck, representing the appellant, Marta Elizabeth Lowen, on this appeal. May it please the court, counsel. This case presents issues arising from a motion for modification of custody pursuant to 518.18D4, the endangerment standard. The child in this case was born April 18, 2014. The original paternity case, the paternity judgment, awarded the parties joint legal custody. There was no physical custody designation in the state of Minnesota. They did have a physical custody designation for out-of-state purposes, and they did that pursuant to a parenting plan under 518.1705.
The way I understand the record is if you move on to December 10, 2019, that is the first time there was an agreement that was reached as far as shared custody, and then there was a lot of history that had transpired between the first parenting agreement and then when we got to the December one. Is that
right? That is correct. There was
and
a lot.
And the December one is the last one we're working under.
That is correct. There's a lot of history. There was a lot of negotiation. People obviously have feelings about what occurred during that negotiation and whether somebody was right or wrong with regard to the speed at which parenting time increased. All of that, even though I believe it was argued that there were concerns with regard to mother delaying the increase in parenting time, eventually what occurred was a significant increase in father's parenting time.
Right. It looked to me as if it was a graduated increase. The child gets older, father is more involved, and essentially it culminated to this December parenting agreement.
That is correct. It started out, there was a 3 days, and then it went to 6 days, which was, you know, 6 out of 14 days. So it ended up being a significant period of time with regard to that agreement. The standard of review here with regard to any custody decision is limited to whether the district court abused its discretion by improperly applying the law or making findings unsupported by the evidence. In this case, appellant has concerns with regard to both of those things.
I'm sure you've discussed with your clients and you're aware of the fact that it's a hard burden to not afford discretion to the district court as far as its determinations, both as to the credibility of the parties and its determinations on custody.
Absolutely. That discussion was had, understanding the Vagnus case and the rarity that the, you know, that a court overturns a trial court with regard to custody. So that discussion was had.
I preface your argument with that statement is because you say one of the issues is improperly applying the law. So, you know, ultimately we look at whether, in fact, there was child endangerment. We look at the best, of course, always the best interest of the child. And my question to you, as far as representing your client, if there was any particular aspect of the court's very lengthy order that you can say is contrary to the evidence or in error?
As far as, so factual error or contrary to the law?
Contrary to the law, because that would be a chance for this court to weigh in as far as what we think the judge did or did not do correctly.
Contrary to the law, and there is a lot of information in our brief and a lot of information in the responsive brief, there are four factors that the court is required to look at. When I say contrary to the law, factor number four compares, and we're not in juvenile court here. This isn't 260C. This is 518.18. And so there are four factors that you look at. And I do have arguments with regard to 1, 2, and 3. 4, however, the court avoids the issue by placing the child with the grandmother. The law says you have to make a determination with regard to the two individuals, the parents, make a decision with regard to what is the impact of the move from one parent to another parent.
All right, and I'm with you on that, because that is one thing that stands out in my head, is that we have someone who has not petitioned as an intervener or third party to the action, and yet there was a somewhat of a custodial award to Grandma when she was not involved. But my question is this: is that properly before us? Was it raised properly in the district court, or are we beyond that in terms of us looking at this as a reviewing court?
As far as how that issue was raised, it creates difficulty, and I understand that with regard to this case. The fact of the matter is there wasn't a request for it. And so the court ordering something, appellant was not on notice that court is going to order the child to go to grandma. There is no petition, there's no motion, there's no basis for it. So at the district court level or at trial, when it's between mom and dad, mom does not know until the court makes the decision, and
respondent counsel argues that it's a moot issue, and it's a moot issue because they say the child has now reunified or been transitioned to dad. And my question to you is that before us? Is that in the record? Do we know what happened? Because mootness would require that we have some information before us.
As far as that being in the record, it is not in the record. There is nothing in the record. And it is one of the difficulties, and I recognize it, having practiced in this area for a long period of time, I recognize the difficulty. And
Let me ask you this. What do you propose that this court do if we agree that it was an irregular inclusion of a party, of someone who's outside of the parties? If we would remand back on that issue, I mean, what do we do?
My suggestion is remanding back on that issue and having the court make specific findings with regard to that, because that weighs the impact, right? And the court never did weigh that impact. And there is, any time there is removal from a parent, and I recognize that there's removal at different times from both parents, anytime there's a removal from a parent, there is impact. And there's impact upon the child. And I do want to say, I think Referee Stebbins was looking for a way to, how can I get around this to have the least amount of impact at a particular period of time? I don't fault him for that. The issue is, we're not in juvenile court. It was a legal issue. We have to follow the law in family court. Now, could somebody have done something else? That is in our brief. Somebody could have brought the 257C motion. Somebody could have brought 257C for even visitation, grandparent visitation. We could have switched things up. That piece never occurred. Because that piece never occurred, there was legal error.
And a remand on that would presume, you know, following this line of thinking, what happens then? I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean if the district court decides, like if we were to say, excuse me, that was error, it doesn't mean that the substantive decision of which parent the child is going to changes. It just would mean that paternal grandmother, the child does not have any custody, or paternal grandmother does not have any custody of the child during that transitional time.
I agree that potentially it goes back, and the referee Stebbins then examines those factors and examines the impact of, you know, the what occurs to the child because of the move. I do understand.
So you go back in time to see had at that time the grandmother not, if the grandmother was not available, then the referee should put themselves back at that time and say, what would the impact have been in transitioning immediately to dad? And then that would reverse that decision, irrespective of sort of where we are today, where the family is today.
I agree that that becomes the difficult piece of it, absolutely. And on all our family court.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. On all our family court cases, one of the issues is we look at things as a snapshot in time. Mm-hmm. It's so easy in car accident cases, other stuff, when we're looking at snapshots. The next day, things were different. I absolutely recognize that. Mm-hmm. But for the record, and for what occurred, our view is there was an error of law at that time. So remanding, and I don't know what referee Stebbins would do with regard to that issue, but there should be proper findings with regard to that and weighing of, and this is going back with regard to the other issues. I think there was a lack of weighing of attachment.
If we would remand this, would you support allowing the court to invite paternal grandma to petition to be a party or an intervener?
I think she would have the ability to do so, like any other individual who has played an important part. Now, do I invite it? Do I believe it's best? I don't know. And so it's a difficult question to answer. But I do, again, understand the concern, because we can't go back in time in a way. Child's life moved on. There's a lot of things that did happen that I can't talk about, you know, since the court case ended, where we're kind of stuck with that snapshot. And so it's our belief that if we look at that, the court committed an error. We need to go through all four factors. My client also had concerns with regard to other factors, because there were determinations. One of the determinations that the court made was my client made the allegations, and there's a concern because that doesn't fit with the factual piece. My client reported something to the school that was a statement that the child made. The tough part here, again, is
I think the question there with referee Stebbins was the fact that the report to the school was the same day that the order we're working under now, the December order, was finalized. So it seems a little suspect that we're finalizing something, but yet a report is being made. The right hand's doing something and the left hand's doing something.
I agree that occurs, and that might have been what referee Stebbins would have found. We don't actually get full findings with regard to that. We get more statements. It's kind of like the experts, when we look at what the experts did. Dr. Hoberman, who never met mother, but was hired by father in the juvenile court proceeding, Dr. Hoberman takes the information, says, I'm concerned that mother had a sexual assault on herself and subsequent narcissistic tendencies based upon the assault that occurred. And I say I'm concerned about that with regard to the evidence, because Dr. Hoberman makes that statement, and from that statement, having never met appellant, having never met the child, this case goes in a completely different direction. Then it goes to the individual doing the psychological evaluations, and the psychological evaluations are interesting because in the psychological evaluation it says, mom's normal, there's not the personality issues, but I'm very concerned. And then Dr. Wojcik cites Dr. Hoberman, who had never met my client.
Reports that get reported on that get reported on.
And then Mindy Mitnick then does an evaluation. She says, I didn't meet with any of the clients, I didn't meet with any of the parents. I didn't meet with the child. I reviewed the information, but I didn't review all the information because I didn't need to review all the information because I have the information from Dr. Hoberman, and I have the information, you know, some information from Dr. Wojcik as well. And so that piece, again, concerning because, and then we have the findings of the doctor. Mother may have, and there's so many may haves in this, in the actual, his determination, mother may have these issues. Mother may have impacted the child's viewpoint. Mother may have, and we get all of that, and referee Stebbins obviously agrees, but there's not an actual determination mother did. That's an issue. Mother may have.
Your 15 minutes has expired, but you will have rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Victoria Brenner on behalf of Taft Law Firm, representing Sean Dempsey. May it please the court. This appeal is about the court's decision to transfer legal and physical custody to father. Secondarily, it is also about the court's decision to place the minor child, ELD, in grandmother's care temporarily while the child's therapist and the family therapist determined when the child was ready to live with the custodial parent who was then respondent. Eventually, as soon as referee Stebbins issued his ruling placing sole physical and sole legal custody and all but 4 hours of supervised parenting time with respondent. In tandem with that was a parenting consultant order. And the court understood that the parenting consultant would then have the ability to kind of serve as the case manager and monitor the therapy that the child and the father were to engage in. The focus on the argument by appellant's counsel is on the facts. The law was absolutely followed here. Referee Stebbins in the district court did not miss one single step in his analysis, in his legal analysis.
Can I ask about the question, no matter how we look at it, even if it's just, does the record support the factual findings or is there an abuse of discretion, et cetera? It seems like a lot of this case factually was about the assertion that mother fabricated and coached child to report a fabricated, make a fabricated report of sexual assault. But are there findings? I mean, I've been reviewing the order looking for that. Is that what the district court via the referee found?
It looks like the district court did find that. There was the termination of parental rights case was dismissed with prejudice by the juvenile court judge. That juvenile court judge iterated a concern about the history of this family and how the termination case came to the court's attention when she dismissed it with prejudice. And then when the case was placed with...
But I guess into findings here. I mean, I read the court on the order here that we're talking about, you know, says, where is it at, on page A13 of the addendum. You know, the court is concerned that respondent continued to subject the, and this is just one place, the minor child to intimate and invasive interviews and examinations despite a lack of corroborating evidence that the child was abused by petitioner and significant evidence to the contrary. Such actions support the suspicion that respondent coached the child, et cetera. But are there findings that, in fact, respondent coached the child?
Sorry, Your Honor. The court did talk about the notebook and all of it. Wasn't just this one isolated incident. This was the culmination of years of mom engaging in alienating behavior against father, dating back all the way to the time of before the child's birth, terminating communication with father who indicated he wanted to be a part of the child's life, not moving and not telling father about her address, having the child and not telling the father when the child was born, requiring that father have supervised parenting time, And then enrolling the child in school.
I need to
interrupt
your answer, because here's what we're getting at. Referee Stebbins recites what everybody testified to, and it's hard to ferret out in his amended order for custody and parenting time that these are in fact his findings, not just repeating that so-and-so got up and testified this, so-and-so, he doesn't say, you know, dad said this and it was clearly believable or anything like that. That's the concern, is I feel like we have to go through and pick and choose and figure out what are the actual findings of the referee versus a reiteration of what the transcript said.
Certainly, Your Honor. I would say the referee did rely on not only the expert witnesses. There was a guardian ad litem who had concerns about mom's veracity. And no, we don't have a smoking gun of mom admitting that she did this.
It's less about a smoking gun. It's more just that the order says, for example, resting on the argument that the court cannot It says, regardless of whether it can be definitively proven that respondent coached the child into making the allegation she did, the issue to be considered as one of the child's best interests, et cetera. It just seems you can't point me to, unless you can, look at this page, this
right.
finding where mother coached child to make the allegation.
Certainly, Your Honor, and you are correct. And I will say it is the totality of the circumstances that the referee relied on. When the child, it was the referee did cite to mother's own words and how she would respond to the child when the child would say, "Daddy is mean." Mom testified that she would answer, "I'm sorry, your daddy is mean." When the child said that, when mother alleged that the child iterated fear upon seeing a man that looked like her father, mom said, "Don't worry, you're safe. That's not dad." And when the child said, "Oh, my dad did this thing to me," mom said, "I'm sorry, dad did this thing to you." So mother, even after the case was dismissed with prejudice, mother continued to bring this child to provider after provider. And the facts certainly do come together in showing that mom was trying to have the child continue to make the allegations to new providers after the termination of parental rights case was dismissed with prejudice. Mom continued. She took the child to people in Duluth, in the Duluth area, and it was pretty clear that from the expert witnesses and from child protection that mom was shopping this child to, say, make these allegations to new providers so that potentially new allegations could be raised. The child wasn't seeing her father, so mom was, you know, left with just this one thing that was dismissed by the juvenile court.
Well, I think the most evident finding by the court is has to do when he's reiterated the testimony of individuals as to their ability to cooperate, and in that discussion of the cooperation is where he actually makes his own findings and says, these statements are effective as telling the child that she should be afraid of father and so on. And I guess that's my concern is whether we have enough of that we have the court's findings.
I would say, you know, mother's own testimony at trial was that she would say these things to the child, these very not supportive of the parent-child relationship. And that had a large impression with the court. Did I answer, Your Honors?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
What do you think of the remedy as far as the judge including a placement of a child with a non-party?
Certainly, Your Honor. And that was something that was considered at the time leading up to trial about what to do with regard to the relief, the immediate relief.
And I realize Grandma testified at trial that she would do this, but that's like looking for a volunteer that's going to take a child.
Right, and this... Sorry, Your Honor. Yes. And I would say there is no problem here. Father requested sole legal custody, sole physical custody, and all but, you know, some supervised parenting time. He was there. The judge first ruled you will have sole legal, sole physical, and almost all of the parenting time. Mom will have subject to mom's supervised parenting time. Therefore, father was in charge of calling all of the shots. And we cite two case law that indicates that the court supports a parent's decision-making authority when placed with, and I believe that's the Chapman decision. The parents can make all the the custody shots. And so father told the court his intention at the trial was when, if I am granted sole custody and parenting time with the child, my goal, my intention is to place her with another caregiver. That would have been his call to make, whether the court ordered it or not. And in fact, Mr. Dempsey took it a step further and said, I wish for the court to order this. Grandmother
so
did not.
Better practice would probably have been for grandma to be part of the court.
So I disagree with that, Your Honor, respectfully, because grandmother's rights run through her child's rights. So once father...
That's true, but I have a court order that says placement of the child. The child shall be immediately placed in the care and residence of petitioner's mother. And then instructs the petitioner to follow therapist recommendations. You can tell dad, you've got to do this, but absent paternal grandma being a party to the action... I have a little problem with somebody saying, third party, you're going to do this. That's like saying, child's going to go with you. Lawyer until the things work out.
Right. And I will say, again, it was requested by Mr. Dempsey as part of his request to have sole legal, sole physical, and all of the parenting time. It was also confirmed by grandmother that she was willing to do this in testimony on trial. At the trial.
In that case, it was probably superfluous putting it in the order and
I would agree with that. I think it was absolutely superfluous, yes. Mr. Dempsey was in an abundance of caution trying to make sure that the record was clear that he was following a therapeutic process to ensure that the child's needs were being met before jumping to the child being placed with him. He wanted it crystal clear, especially in light of the allegations of abuse, that where the child was going, he wanted it clear to the world and the universe, where the child was going and how
in
that...
In your briefing, you argue that this is a moot point. Why would it be?
So the court, because of the parenting consultant process and the court's very own order, it certainly reads like a temporary arrangement, because the court also said, you know, the parties shall follow the therapeutic processes, and that shall determine when it's time for dad to take the child into his custody and care. Father could have arranged another caregiver right away. He, in an abundance of caution, hearing all this testimony about the child's fear of him from mother, because he hadn't seen the child in over 12 months leading up to trial, he didn't know the child's state of mind for sure. He was hearing from mother that she was afraid. So he wanted to do the right thing, the therapeutic thing, and he could have placed her with anyone else, but he found his mother. She was able to do it, and she testified that she was willing to do it. It is absolutely irrelevant to the fact that she didn't do a 257C motion because he had the custody. He was calling the shots. Did I answer Your Honor's question?
Well, you did. My concern, of course, is when things happen and judges' words are criticized in terms of what they're supposed to do and what not to do. So that's why I bring it up. I think it's an important issue.
Right. And again, I will just say, you know, it became a moot point. There are subsequent court orders. Child support was modified. I believe it was in August of this year because father has the child in his care. He's had her in his care for a while. Up to that point, so he modified child support based on that. And then again, there was an August ruling from the court as well of 2022 that includes findings that father had the child in his care. Correct, Your Honor. But, mom wasn't prejudiced, Your Honor's point, Judge Smith, there was no prejudice against mom. The court was intending fully to place the child in father's care after doing a thorough best interest analysis on this case and finding that the child was, after finding that there was endangerment for this child. He balanced the harms. And the best way that the court could deliver and make this child's best interests is by meeting the remedy that that Mr. Dempsey asked the court to make. Please give me sole legal, sole physical, parenting time, and I will place the child with my mother. Court, you may please order it. mother wouldn't have been prejudiced because the court was clear in its findings that she endangered the child. In terms of the expert analysis, James Wojcik was appointed, Dr. James Wojcik was appointed by the court as a neutral to conduct an evaluation of mother. As part of forensic evaluations, the court reviews the full record, and that is what Mr. Wojcik did. He met mother, he interviewed her, and he also reviewed the full court record. And so for him to cite to the Dr. Hoberman report is perfectly appropriate for him to do. And, you know, I will say, too, appellant in this case had a full right to put on her own experts. And she didn't call any of her Harmony Feldman or her own experts to refute the claims that were being made here. Mother moved all the way to Hermantown during the before the termination of parental rights case was concluded. Her efforts to excise Mr. Dempsey from this child's life were persistent and abundant. Any further questions?
It appears not. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. With regard to the last statement about the mother moving the child to Hermantown, the mother moved the child to Hermantown with the approval of the juvenile court, with the approval of the guardian ad litem in juvenile court, with the approval of the social worker in juvenile court. She did that with their approval. She moved back when they said move back. That's what occurred there. So utilizing that fact, and I agree, the court utilized that fact and said, well, she's interfering. She followed the juvenile court order. And it's one of the tough pieces here. Everything goes back to her child makes the statement to her. She acts upon that statement, tells them. Then it goes to Child Protective Services. Child Protective Services took action itself. They made her follow a case plan. They made her be a protective parent. She could not take action. And then this one-year time frame, the one-year time frame was not imposed. That was court-ordered in juvenile court. If mother had allowed the contact, what would the impact have been? Juvenile court would have come down on mother. We didn't know how the juvenile court case was going to turn out later. With regard to Dr. Wojcik, the report, when you look at the information, Dr. Wojcik, in the transcript, page 52, lines 15 through 17, she did not demonstrate overt psychopathology, severe depression, or other significant disorders in personality. Dr. Wojcik then relies on Hoberman's evaluation. Again, Hoberman did not talk to appellant. And yes, he can look at all information, but looking at information from somebody who was doing a psychosexual evaluation of dad only as his expert in juvenile court, and as his expert in juvenile court, he said, it's not dad's fault, it's mom's fault. That's where this all starts. And then Dr. Wojcik, if you look again at the testimony, he indicates in the evaluation that, it's replete with mayhaps. And the mayhaps, Dr. Wojcik, based on Dr. Hoberman's determination, indicates appellant may have developed elaborate cognitive bias. Appellant may have gradually reinforced the child to distrust respondent. Appellant may have reinforced the child to develop sexual statements. Appellant's parents may have contributed to this sequence of events. It is all mayhaps. And then referee Steppens does not make the determination that this did happen. And so to say the record or looking at the totality of the record, there's a lot of information in the record. What there is not is findings that she made the statement. There's not findings that she impacted that relationship. There are a lot of actual findings about her supporting the relationship with father. There's a lot of testimony. There's father's own testimony. He gets a DUI. She's willing to drive the child. He has other issues. She was willing to expand the parenting time. She was willing to drive, provide transportation for the child so she could continue, or so the child could continue that relationship. The only piece that goes to mom is that statement. The child makes a statement to her, and she, after the child makes a statement to her, reports this statement. That's what we have. Everything else is not fact. We have experts saying a lot of things and a lot of mayhaves, but we don't have facts. And we even have respondents saying, respondent believes this happened. Respondent, and then he says, well, I can't really know what happened. And the expert can't really know what happened. And referee Stebbins says, it never makes the finding that it actually did happen. That is the concern here. It's one statement. And again, if we look at mom's support, I asked the court, read the record. It is in the brief with regard to mom did support the relationship with the child and father up until the time when the child made a statement to mother. Thank you.
And that is a perfect segue for me not to interrupt your timing. I want to ask both counsel, it's just something from the Court of Appeals. It takes a village to raise a child. We have a mediation program that we normally have participants proceed with before they commence to having their cases heard. Was that entertained here? I know there was an allegation of domestic abuse, but referee Stebbins said no. Did you do that?
The parties did that.
They did. Okay. Yeah. I'm just curious. We're trying to evaluate that system.
Yeah, the parties did that, and things didn't resolve, but I think
that's
the program
fine.
Is.
That's fine. I was just a curiosity question, not anything to do with the merits of either of your case. Thank you for both of you in terms of your briefing and your arguments that are helpful to us today as far as our evaluation. The matters are deemed submitted, which means that a decision will be forthcoming from this court within 90 days.